possession of an ostrich, one of a flock donated to King Charles II by the King of Morocco. Sir Thomas, a keen naturalist, was fascinated by this big foreign bird and eager that his son sent him news of its habits. Is it vigilant like a goose? Does it delight in sorrel, yet recoil from bay leaves? And does it eat iron? This final query, he suggested helpfully to his son, might be best uncovered by wrapping the metal first in pastry, like some sort of ferrous sausage roll, since perhaps it will not take it up alone. This zoological recipe swap had a decidedly scientific purpose. Brown wanted to test an ancient myth that ostriches were capable of digesting absolutely anything, even iron. According to one medieval German scholar, the ostrich's taste for the strong stuff was such that the bird's dinner consists of a church door key and a horseshoe. As ostriches were bestowed on the courts of Europe by the emirs and explorers of Africa, generations of enthusiastic natural philosophers encouraged the foreign fowl to consume scissors, nails, and a glut of other ironmongery. On the surface, this experimentation appears to be lunacy. Yet dig a little deeper, and there is a scientific method to the madness. Ostriches can't digest iron, but they have been observed swallowing large, sharp stones. Why? The world's biggest bird has evolved into a rather unusual grazing animal, whose usual diet of grasses and shrubs is tough to digest. And unlike their fellow plant munchers from the African plains, the giraffe and antelope, ostriches lack a ruminating stomach. They don't even have teeth. Instead, they must tear the fibrous grasses from the ground with their beak and swallow them whole. They employ the quarry of jagged rocks in their muscular gizzard to do the job of grinding down this stringy dinner into more digestible pieces. They can clunk around the savannah with up to a kilogram of stones in their stomach. Scientists fancy this up and call them gastroliths. Again, understanding the ostrich is about context. But so too we must understand the context of the scientists that have been prodding and poking for the truth about animals for centuries. As such, Brown is just one of a great cast of idiosyncratic obsessives you'll meet in the pages of this book. There's the 17th century physician who tried to spontaneously generate toads by placing a duck on a dung heap, an old recipe for creating life. There's also an Italian Catholic priest with a name befitting a Bond bad guy and the moves to match. Lazzaro Spallanzani wielded a mean pair of scissors in the name of science, whether tailoring tiny bespoke underpants for his animal subjects or removing their ears. Although both these men were products of the earliest days of the Enlightenment, scientists in more recent times have also chosen to pursue bizarre and often misguided methods in their search for truth. Like the 20th century American psychopharmacologist whose curiosity compelled him to get a herd of elephants very drunk indeed, with suitably demented results. Every century has its eccentric animal experimenters, and there will no doubt be many more to come. We humans may have split the atom, conquered the moon, and tracked down the Higgs boson, but when it comes to understanding animals, we still have a long way to go. I'm fascinated by the mistakes we've made along the way and the myths we've created to fill in the gaps in our understanding. They reveal much about the mechanics of discovery and the people doing the discovering. When Pliny the Elder described a hippopotamus secreting crimson liquor from its skin, he reached for the explanations familiar to him, those of Roman medicine, and imagined an animal bleeding itself to stay healthy. Of course he did. He was a man of his time. He was wrong, but the genuine explanation for the hippo's scarlet ooze is just as extraordinary as the old myth, and it is actually related to self-medication. I found that taking a dissecting knife to our greatest animal myths often exposes a charming logic, transporting us to times of wondrous naivety when little was known and anything was possible. Why on earth wouldn't birds migrate to the moon, hyenas switch sex with the season, and eels spontaneously generate out of...